Behind every interesting person is a great story. This is Person of Interest with Natalie Jones.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Person of Interest with Natalie Jones podcast. That's me. Today we have Richard Cook. Richard Cook is a staple in the LGBTQA community here in Cincinnati. He and his partner are behind the Tea Dances and the Bar E19. And he's from Wales. He has the most beautiful accent. He speaks so eloquently and softly, and I freaking love this man. We really, really hit it off, and I asked him a lot of really deep questions. We kind of go on tangents. And also, we had technical difficulties because I am trying to press all the right buttons here. And so in true podcasting form, I have just replaced it around and we start it back over and do what we can. I didn't add any bells and whistles to it because that's not what we do here. I hope you all enjoy. Every word this man says is worth listening to. I love him and all of everything about this. This is Richard Cook, everybody. But so tell me a little bit more. Okay, so with E19, you obviously have all of these things as like leadership skills. I'm like, I just want to like listen to you and take notes all day. You should start a web series, do a TED Talk. Have you done a TED Talk yet?
I have not, no.
That is so surprising to me. That's what I was like, in the research, I didn't find any. I'm like, but sometimes you don't catch it all, you know? I don't know. So why is E19 called E19?
It's pretty simple.
Okay.
When I was thinking about names for the bar, I had a list of about 50 names. Mm-hmm. And I had all these names that really were, I don't know, you could think of them as being sort of stereotypical.
Tell me a couple.
Atlas.
Okay.
London Town. what else do we have? Elm Bar, Blue Lounge.
I like M Bar. Blue Lounge. I'm glad it's not called
Well,
Blue Lounge.
So we were talking with my family, my son and daughter, one evening over wine. And I was like, I'm struggling with these names. And I read out all these names and they were like, nah, that's not cutting it. No, that sounds like too much of a gay bar. And I wanted a name that was inclusive. Mm-hmm. I wanted a name that people could feel when they hear the name, it's like, yeah, I think I could belong there. I didn't want a name that excluded people from the get-go.
Okay.
So I thought that... So we're on the intersection of Elm and Findlay. Mm-hmm. Well, I thought that was 19th Street, not Findlay. But I guess technically is because it's like 1900 block because we're at 1905 Elm Street.
Okay.
So for the longest time, I was like, you know, we're at Elm and 19th, and so we're having this conversation, and so my daughter said, why don't you call it E19, Elm and 19th?
Wow.
So I like the ring of that. And and then we started to play around with logos and sort of logo concepts, which was fun. So talk about, you know, the right side of the brain.
Yeah.
So we started to play around with logos and concepts. And I don't know if you've seen the E19 logo. It's an E and a 1 and a 19. Yeah. It's a vertical presentation. Mm-hmm. Which I think is fun, is playful, but it also...
It's done so well. The whole marketing of all of it is just, it's done so well. It's very on point. It's clean. It's beautiful. It delivers. I love it.
Well, it's that's sort of the long answer for why it's E19.
And what are your kids' names?
My son is James, and my daughter is Olivia.
And how old are they?
James is 31 and Olivia is 26. So they've flown the nest and they're both here in Cincinnati right now.
Okay.
James is married to Lauren and they live in Columbia, Tusculum. Olivia is working remotely back in Cincinnati. She works for a tech company in Boston. Mm-hmm. So she's the e-commerce director for the marketing arm of this company.
Oh, wow. And she is. Well, I mean, she came up. Well, thank you very much, Olivia, for coming up with the name. It's a great name.
And so she helps me with a lot of social media for E19.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Because I feel like I connect. It must be her. But she doesn't run the Instagram account.
She does.
It's Olivia who has the Instagram account?
Yeah, she does the Instagram account.
Oh, okay. It's Olivia, then, who I have connected with multiple times.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
She said, Dad, guess what? Natalie Jones wants to talk to you.
Oh my God.
She's like, oh, you need to do this.
I was told that somebody else did it. I don't know. Somebody told me, I guess there are rumors going around of who's running that Instagram account because
It's Olivia and she's doing a fine job.
She really is. A fan freaking tastic job. And so were you really scared when COVID hit about the opening of this? Because you opened mid COVID.
We opened, right. So we started the construction in April, which was very scary because we were in the middle of a shutdown.
But 2 years in the process, but you started construction in April.
This April.
Okay.
And so we were just trying to gauge, you know, is this going to be over by the time we open? Obviously not.
Yeah.
We just kept going. I had a great construction team. I worked with Urban Sites Construction, incredibly supportive.
And they have they're all over the city. They're really progressive and really part of the overturn of gentrification.
Redevelopment,
that's right, of Cincinnati. So I feel like them and like Model Group are pretty big in it. And Greasy DC.
Yes, yeah. So all of these organizations are doing terrific work. I was specifically working with Urban Sites, an absolute pleasure to work with the team.
Yeah.
So professional, friendly, nothing's too much trouble. And we got this done in 122 days.
Oh my God, it's great.
When you think about the complexity and the sophistication of the decor and the lighting and the sound, and it was challenging.
And I can't imagine, especially making everything distance, because even in our distance time, you can still have a great time and host a bunch of people, and it doesn't feel awkward because you go into a lot of places right now. There are a lot of challenges, and it just seems bizarre, and that is not that way in E19 at all.
Thank you, Natalie. We obviously had to pivot from our expectation was our opening week events and parties had to really obviously be completely scaled back.
Yeah.
It was nothing like we wanted it to be, obviously.
Yeah.
We have 400 people capacity there. And so with the social distancing requirements, our occupancy now is at 102. So it's a quarter. So it's a 25% occupancy. It's still a nice number of people.
It is, yeah.
But it's a large number of people to sort of constantly manage and make sure that everyone's following the protocols that we have in place. And we have very stringent protocols in place.
Were you worried when you opened that you were going to be bombarded with a lot of people and a lot of attention? And like, how are you going to keep this within COVID,
We were.
Yeah.
And we were.
Yeah.
We were. And so we learned a lot in the first couple of weeks. And we do have very stringent protocols that are considered best practice in the industry and exceed CDC guidelines.
Well, and you guys do it with a smile on your face. There's something worse than going to, in these crazy times, going to a bar or restaurant and, God forbid, you drink a beer, you get up to go to the bathroom, and you forget to put your mask up or something, and people are very rude to you about it, you know? And you guys are not that way at all. I just speak in the praises. And also, can I say, E19 is a place to be seen. Hair flip. Every time I'm there, I get DM'd like, I saw you at E19. I'm like, who are these people? Like strangers, literally strangers. And I'm like, okay, cool. All right.
Well, we have some cool elements there that are Instagram, that can help with your Instagrammable moments.
Yeah.
So we have some beautiful murals that were painted by Jenny Ustick and her team. Do you know Jenny?
I do not.
So she's painted a number of murals in OTR, and so she is professor of fine art at DAP.
Okay.
And so she and her team painted these incredible murals inside E19.
They're beautiful. How long, when did they start doing those?
So I think it was probably about 6 weeks out from opening.
Okay.
So we needed to make sure that, you know, all of the major construction mm-hmm. had been completed first before Jenny and team came in and started doing their work. We didn't want that to be spoiled in any way.
Yeah. How do you feel about the notion you have to, obviously, if you're not part of the future, then you're stuck in the past. Do you feel that there is, the gay community is leading, in your position in it, that you're like leading the future, and do you like where it's going?
Wow, Natalie, that's a deep, thought-provoking question.
It just came to me.
Yeah, gosh darn. Let me think about this. So, I do think that we in the gay community have had to figure out a lot on our own.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I think we're really, really good at creating our future, because what's the alternative? And we have allies, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, sometimes we have to take action. And I think we're really good at that. When you look at interior design, when you look at the service and hospitality industry, how many times have you been at a hotel, a bar or a restaurant served by a gay person?
Yeah.
And the level of service and friendliness that you get.
I feel like there's a level of freedom, whether you realize it or not, that you're providing freedom and confidence. And I feel like this did not exist. I mean, in my experience, so I moved out of Over the Rhine in 2011 and then moved back last year. And through that time, I moved to the West Coast, or I just moved out of Cincinnati and came back. And it was a completely different city when I moved back. And a huge part of it was the strong presence and comfortable presence of the gay community in Cincinnati. I felt like it was maybe starting, like I said, the Chris Seelbach rally, I remember mm-hmm. was one of the last things I did before I moved. That was in the spring. It was still a little chilly with March. And then like that May, I moved. And I feel like so much was accomplished when I was gone, you know? And if you guys are, do you feel like it's still moving in that upward trajectory?
Yeah.
You say you keep two steps forward, one step back, you know?
Yeah, I still think we're moving forward. Yes. I think there's greater awareness and acceptance across the city and the Cincinnati city area, greater Cincinnati area. Mm-hmm. Not so much so in the suburbs, perhaps.
Well.
Right, but
yeah, trying.
Well, so let's talk about Cincinnati and Hamilton County, because outside of that environment, it's a little bit different.
Wow, I guess I forget I'm a downtowner, and my mind doesn't go to the. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, let's just. Donald Trump was our president. How the fuck did that even happen for so long? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess America isn't exactly where we want it to be, but it is a lot of, like I said, time. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like you can't force people.
It's never a smooth, perfect process by any means. And so I think if you look at larger spaces of time, like so when you mentioned that you were on the West Coast, so how many years was that?
Seven years I was gone, yeah.
Yes. So when you look at the journey in that amount of time, then it feels like there's a lot of progress.
Yeah.
But, you know, at any moment in time, it could, you know, it's not perfect. It's not a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
And democracy is like that, right? So
yeah.
democracy is never perfect. And so we're seeing that right now. And it does win through eventually, but it gets a bit wobbly sometimes on the journey. Mm. And I would say the same thing for the journey of LGBTQ+ acceptance. And there are pockets of acceptance and there are pockets of resistance. Cincinnati, the city of Cincinnati and Hamilton County, you know, generally tends to be, you know, a friendly pocket of inclusion and support. And so many people feel feel, you know, draw comfort from that. And it's no surprise that we're attracting more, you know, that our LGBTQ population is growing.
Yeah. And it's cheaper to live here, too.
It is.
It's more fun. I love how many people come to Cincinnati who have been, especially my friends from the West Coast, come here and they're like, this place is rad. Like, I always think of Detroit and Cincinnati in the same thing. Like, they're like, I never thought of Ohio until I met you. Like, I would never think to come here. And I'm so glad that I have. And people just rave about Cincinnati.
They do.
All the time. I'm like, oh, well, now it's our little secret. Don't let them come here. I can't afford any more property taxes now, you know.
Well, you know, I say to people, you have to try it before you pass judgment, right?
Very true.
And it's really interesting because I've met a number of people at E19 who have moved to Cincinnati to sort of really sort of downsize and simplify their lives, mm-hmm. Enjoy a better standard of living. Some people have moved from New York to Cincinnati just to, you know, they may have family here. So they've been living in the big cities, and it's tough there right now. It's really tough. It's expensive, and you know, depending on which city you're in, which state you're in, there are varying restrictions, and so it does make for a more austere life. And so it was heartwarming to meet some people who'd actually mm-hmm. moved here to try and better, you know. Better themselves and create a better life for themselves.
Oh, that's, I mean, I can understand that. I was living in LA the last place I lived before I moved back home. And while that was very fun and very exciting, and there were a lot of great opportunities there, my quality of life was abysmal. You know, you spend the whole time in your car, you're always mad. There are just too many things to worry about that don't matter that you have to worry about. It just is out of control. I feel like I was like losing it a little bit.
Yeah, you're right. Quality of life is what people are, you know, finally, you know, realizing is mm-hmm. what is the quality of my life, and
yeah.
is this worth it?
Yeah,
and
right?
So I think we have a great quality of life here generally, you know, within our city.
You seem so calm and relaxed and cool. Do you get overwhelmed by all these things that you're involved in? You're a father of two. You're a husband. You own a bar. The tea dances are still a part of your life. You have a full-time job where you are a leader in that. Do you find yourself getting overwhelmed and now you have to change everything with COVID?
I do. And that's where my husband comes in. So he's a great stabilizing and calming influence on me. And so when I'm able to vent to him, to Marty, mm-hmm. when I value his opinion, it always grounds me, and I'm also a firm believer of, you know, I'm definitely not perfect in any way. Mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer in, I'll sometimes go to bed, you know, really stressed out and frustrated, and I know the next day it's usually a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a huge believer of sleeping on a problem, because it does feel genuinely different the
for
next
sure.
day.
Different mentality for
yeah.
sure.
When I'm exhausted and frustrated, that is not the time to be strategizing and working on solutions, unless it's a crisis, right?
And you have to, yes.
You have
and then
to.
Everything else fades
you can't
away.
Just put, there's some things that you just can't put off.
I've learned so many. So many mottos from you today. Sleep on it. More is more. No excuses. No excuses as good as a result. 99.9% is a pinch. 100 is a cinch. I love this. I'm writing these down, by the way. This is going to go in the Tea Dance Coffee Table book. Okay.
That's great.
Well, let's take it back to your beginning life. So you are you technically, can we call you Welsh because you're from Wales?
I am from Wales. I am mm-hmm. from the southwest coast of Wales.
Okay.
My nationality is British, but my you know, my heritage is Welsh. So I was born and raised in Wales in a little town called Carmarthen.
And do you have any siblings?
I have one brother, Peter.
Peter?
So he's 2 years younger than me. He's a meteorologist in Cornwall. In the southwest of the UK.
Oh, wonderful.
So that little, you know, the UK, that sort of like, it looks like a pointy leg.
Mm-hmm.
He's that's where he lives.
Oh, cool. Do you see him often?
No, not very often.
Okay. you don't go home, not home as much?
It's so I do go home. You know, my parents are still alive. So
that's a blessing.
It is, and it's always great to see them. It's not often enough, obviously, living here. But I do try to go home at least once a year. So actually, the last time I was home was in January, just before the shutdown.
Oh wow!
So it's for my dad's 90th birthday.
Whoa, 90!
Yeah.
Wow. What's the key to long life, do you think?
I think he likes his whiskey.
Yeah. This is not what I thought you were going to say.
He likes his whiskey. And, you know, he's always had a great sense of humor, my dad. And he doesn't take things too seriously. He's sort of lived his life with an attitude of you know, just making a joke out of something. And he's always making jokes.
Oh, cool. My type of guy.
And he used to play a lot of golf, too. So,
how was life growing up?
So it's really interesting. So I'm a scientist. And
crazy.
My parents were teachers. My dad was a math teacher. My uncle's a scientist. One of them is a very well-known a marine microbiologist, so he's pretty famous globally.
What was his name?
His name is Gareth Jones.
Okay.
Professor Gareth Jones. And so he's still working. He's like, gosh, he's 85 now, and he's still working.
So look him up. I am a nerd environmentalist at heart, so.
Yeah, yeah. He's done a lot of research into marine fungi.
Yeah.
And has a few species named after him. So if you find a new species, right, you get them named after you.
Super cool.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Nice.
So my family has been very, inspirational to me.
Yeah.
And I have a number of role models.
Yeah, thoroughbred support there.
Right, and so I wanted to excel in the sciences. Mm-hmm. So I studied biochemistry as a bachelor's degree, and then I did a master's in biochemical engineering, and then I have a PhD in physical chemistry.
Whoa.
All at the University of Wales, College of Swansea.
Wow. Smart man over here. How do you think that this
very left-brained?
Yes. Well, how do you think that science can relate to day-to-day life? Like as science, as in like microbes, as if that's the correct term to use, interact with each other. Obviously, human beings are made up of all of those cells. Do you think that there are like big similarities to make easy comparisons? Like, as into how you view, interpret science, you also interpret life. Does that make sense?
So let me try and answer that.
I know. Like, do you get what I'm going for here?
So as a scientist, I believe in science.
Yeah. Me too.
I believe in facts. I believe in data. What's happening now in the country is very challenging to me, mm-hmm. where science is being discarded at the federal government level.
Don't get me started.
Yeah. So I live my life with that sort of mentality that science is real, and science is always evolving, isn't it? I mean,
the world is evolving. You're changing it, but genetics
and
everything
exciting.
Is a result.
It's exciting. Yeah. It's very exciting to me. I love to know how things work, and I believe in data.
Yeah.
I just believe in data, good scientific data, and that helps drives decisions, good decisions.
Oh.
So as I live my life, I tend to be very data oriented. I like to gather data to help make decisions, and sometimes. Yeah, what I'm learning, you know, is this is the right side of my brain now talking.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always perfect, and so sometimes there are gray areas,
yeah.
And then you have to make emotional decisions as well. So it's when you get it right, you know, you're able to incorporate data, but you know, so I think of that as the you know, the mind, and then also the heart, right? So you can combine the best of both, and so that's what I'm trying to learn as a leader is yes, head based and heart based too. So
yes, that seems very ideal. You seem to be doing it very well. And what did you want to do when you were getting your master's in microbiology?
I thought I wanted to be a doctor.
Okay.
It was a convoluted decision process. It netted out that I wanted to work in industry. And so
The medical industry?
As a chemist, so it not necessarily medical, but in an industry. So I applied to industry, you know, to companies like Unilever, British Petroleum, Procter & Gamble. And I was offered a job by Procter & Gamble.
Okay.
So I started out in the UK at the European Technical Centre, west of London, for health and beauty care.
Oh.
And so I started working as a formulator at P&G, applying my chemical skills, my chemistry skills. And so I worked on emulsion technology for Olay.
Emotion technology?
Emulsion.
Okay,
technology.
Emulsion.
So
okay.
You think about a cream and a lotion.
Yeah.
That's an emulsion.
Okay.
So I formulated a number of products. I have a few patents for some products that I developed for P&G.
Oh, like what? Can you tell us? Like something I would know?
It was for a gel-based moisturizer, a hydrogel.
Oh, okay.
Those are really big in Europe.
Like hydrogen peroxide or the hydrochloric acid stuff. Hydro just means water. Okay, I'll stop.
these are sort of, you know, you think of like an eye gel.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of consistency. Some of these clear eye gels, we were looking at making facial moisturizer products as hydrogels.
Wow, I would say I'm very fascinated by this and not surprised. I feel like I have found in a lot of people whose work I've really loved and who do a great job in whatever field it is that they're doing, they have some sort of science background. And then they incorporate that scientific knowledge and just that model or foundation of thought into something else with more feeling or more arts in general. Like I know some DJs who were originally scientists, but they just take like their algorithm brain and insert beats and songs, et cetera, and make great music, you know? So I feel like your brain, that's what you're reminding me of right now.
Well, you look at Da Vinci, right? So he's an incredible example of, you know, a lot of people think of him as a scientist, you know, incredibly, you know, ahead of his time.
Mm-hmm.
But he was also an artist, a painter, right?
Yeah.
So I think people that can do both can be incredibly impactful and successful in this world.
I agree, and I feel like that the part, those two aspects aren't in generations before us, and I can even say like administrations or whatnot, but that type of knowledge hasn't been valued as much as it is now. And I feel like that's really important going through progression, as we're talking about, that to incorporate more of the head and the heart and not just what you, not just head and... Like for instance, how gym and art programs are being removed from schools. I feel like that is, and that's been happening for 20 years, for 30 years now, you know. I feel like that funding is more important than funding for math that someone's not going to use when they're older. And you need to exercise both sides of those brains, but I feel like the spirit of the human is more important at times, you know what I mean? And you're still using the left side of your brain while you're, you know, learning. I don't know where I'm going on a tangent now, but like why you're learning music or something.
Well, I think when you take something away, you're obviously denying the person, the experience. And I can only speak from my experience where I've been fortunate to be able to explore both.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel more complete. I feel more complete as a person now that I am developing more of, you know, my right side of the brain, and I'm really enjoying that.
Wow. So on that, the feeling of completeness that's the Sanger life. Like, that's the dream. What advice would you give to someone who's looking for that or to live a sound life, live a complete life? Because I feel like I know a lot of people. Not everybody can say that.
I'm certainly by no means a guru.
advice.
I can only share what I feel and what I've experienced. I just started doing it. So before I moved downtown, I lived in Kennedy Heights. Do you know Kennedy mm-hmm. Heights in the city? So my partner then, Marty and I, we moved there in 2001, just after 9/11. And one of the first things that we did...
You moved downtown in 2001?
No, we moved to Kennedy Heights okay. in 2001 from... We had very humble beginnings. We had a small apartment in Forest Park. And so we were able to, you know, save up enough money to move to Kennedy Heights. And we had a beautiful home there. One of the first things that I did was work with a team of people when we learned that... Are you familiar with the Kennedy Heights Art Center?
No.
So this is a beautiful Victorian building built in 1875. It's on Montgomery Road, and they were going to tear it down. I was shocked because coming from the UK, we generally don't knock our historic buildings down. I mean, I have a castle right in the middle of my town in Wales.
Yeah.
So. We wanted to preserve the building. It was the mayor's mansion. Lewis Kennedy lived there. And so Kennedy Heights is named after him.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So we got together, raised some funds, and we saved it from demolition, and we created the Kennedy Heights Art Center.
Wow.
So I think that really was... So it's like, it's just about taking action, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, back to what I said earlier, it's actions speak louder than words. It's about taking action in life and just doing it.
Yeah.
And what I found with saving that building was that's where I actually started to really interact with artists and you know, just start to experience art at the very local level and start mm-hmm. to appreciate that. And actually, I was, I actually took the role of art director there. So I was responsible for putting on all of the shows, the exhibitions, and working with the artists to you know, to curate their work and place it in the Kennedy Heights Art Center and market it.
Oh my gosh! What year was this?
So this was probably, Kennedy Heights Art Center's been going now for 17 years. It's still going strong. So
this is probably
about 10 to 12 years ago.
A
little bit more than that.
Did you love it?
I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Wow.
So that's where I really sort of started to experience the joy and the fun mm-hmm. of doing it. And yeah, I'd be up late hanging artwork at the center, working with the artists, looking at their work, learning about them, you know, the stories behind their work. And so that, I think, that was one of these sort of the earliest... I'm not a good artist by any means. I can't paint or draw to save my life.
Everybody's art is different.
Right. And so I found myself thinking that, gosh, you know, maybe this is the way that I can do this, that I can be an artist in air quotes. This is how I can develop the right side of my brain, is just to hang out with artists mm-hmm. and be around them and to support them and to appreciate them and their work. And that was, I think, the beginning of it.
And what have you learned from artists and submerging yourself into that part of life?
That they're cool people, that they obviously very talented. If you really think about it, for when you look at the work, you think about the thought process that goes through in the mind of the artist and how that translates into that work. I mean, I admire that so much. It's like, what makes them think of these things? Mm-hmm. And then to create such a beautiful thing, you know, either on paper or a piece of pottery, right? What makes them really sort of think about that, to do it?
I feel the same way. I feel like it's ultimate freedom. Yeah. You know, freedom and confidence and like intertwining of the two. And whether they realize, I feel like maybe a lot of artists aren't as confident and that's their thing, as they act out of that feeling or whatnot, you know, but they're still, I feel like it's ultimate freedom with mind elasticity and just going with it, which I think is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. We have such great talent here in Cincinnati, and we have
artists. The art scene in Cincinnati is amazing and super thriving. I feel like not a lot of people realize that, or not as much.
We are very fortunate. I mean, I think we disproportionately have, you know, for a city our size, you know, have an amazing art scene. Mm-hmm. Amazing and so fortunate. And I think that is also, I think, another driving factor for, you know, making the city so vibrant and inclusive.
Yes.
Right? And I just love meeting artists here in the city. Just
me too. And I feel like if anything, like what has been like Cincinnati, yes, obviously a lot of new buildings have been made and restored. But there's also like we're now the forefront of art. If I could come back as somebody who left Cincinnati in 2010 over the Rhine and then moved back 10 years later, art 100%. And that's in the intricate detail of restoring the facades of buildings and to the murals into Washington Park and the landscape and all of the paintings all over the place and on the ground, you know, and all the shops that have come in that are displaying artist work, et cetera, and all the gatherings that happen because of it, you know, 100%.
Yeah, it's overall just a cool city and a cool vibe, and there's just so many layers to mm-hmm. Cincinnati. And
this is wonderful. I'm like, I can just sit here and talk all day. Like, I know you're making me love it more and more. I feel like as somebody, you know, it's hard. I feel like it's easier for someone who's from a place to not appreciate it as much as somebody who moves here, you know, but Cincinnati is changing. I feel like it's a whole new, you know, anyway, it's a whole new city, and I've come to love it in a whole new way I never thought possible.
I think Cincinnati is, you know, in its heyday, you know, as a river city and the steamboats, I think Cincinnati is now having, you know, it's coming into its own again
mm-hmm.
in a very different way.
For sure. So. And it hasn't lost that grit, too.
I agree.
I feel like as much as I've moved around, and I lived in Clifton before, like the west side, I moved from the west side to Hyde Park to Clifton to over the Rhine, and then I went around, and I never met anyone who had as much grit, or they were always surprised by the grit that I had. And I was like, it's just from living in the city, babe, in Cincinnati, but like Cincinnati more in a way that like New York or Detroit could compare to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of that scent, I don't know. That.
I love living here. I have so many friends and wonderful memories here, and I look forward to building more in Cincinnati, and I have great hopes for the journey that we're on.
Yeah, me too. Richard, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Yeah, this was absolutely wonderful.
It's been fun chatting with you.
I could talk to you all day. But thank you so much for everything. And is there any place you want to say where people can reach you, or do you have an Instagram or at E19 Bar, T-Dances? When are they coming back?
So, I mean, I think the easiest way to reach me, if you've got any questions, mm-hmm. is, you know, my email is Richard, RICHARD, mm-hmm. at E19Bar.com.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Richard, thank you so much. It's been a joy to meet you. And I must say, I have to give a shout out to my bestie, Pam Kravitz. She set this all up and had amazing things to say. So
Pam is amazing. She's one of my favorite artists. So,
yeah,
so when I think about amazing, cool, fun, you know, talented people, you know, Pam is very much front of mind.
Totally. She set my like my whole world up here in Cincinnati. I feel like all the people that I know are because of her. And she's also a really fun person to talk shit mm-hmm. with, too. I feel like
she's fun to hang around with.
She is so much fun.
So much fun and joy.
Yes. Once again, Richard, thank you so much.
Thank you, Natalie. Yeah. A pleasure. You know, what I hope is a difference here in the city.
Well, I think, Richard, that you're making a huge difference in the city here. And so 25 years ago, You came here and you're still here. And then you decided to start. So you worked at P&G and then you decided to start the tea dances in 2018.
Right. In 2017, actually.
17. Okay.
Yeah. And I still work at P&G. So I have a very full life and schedule.
Yeah. So, it sounds like it.
But P&G has been an incredible place to work. And I've worked in many places and in many business units. And so I've been with P&G for 31 years. I've only worked for P&G. And and I have had a blessed career, very fortunate to have worked in the UK, had a short assignment in Caracas, Venezuela.
Ooh, how was that?
It was amazing. It was incredible. Met so many incredible people, traveled around Venezuela, traveled around South America, really got to love the cultures and the cuisines especially.
Yeah.
And so we've been really sort of influenced by our travels, my husband and I. We've been lucky to travel, and so we've brought little bits and pieces of that back
okay,
to Cincinnati.
So when did you and Marty get married?
We got married 2 years ago at our home
here
in Cincinnati.
Congrats.
So we had 150 people to the house.
Wonderful.
It was so much fun. And we've been together 23 years.
Oh, okay. Rad.
And married for two. So
yeah, we didn't
so
miss
lots of anniversaries to celebrate.
Yes, definitely. Okay, so then you decided to start. So the tea dances, do you feel like that's really where you came alive?
Well, it's so interesting. So this is an interesting story. So
okay.
So hang on in there with me.
Oh, I'm here.
So I just love hanging out with people on a Sunday fun day afternoon. Okay.
Oh my gosh, me too.
So we used to go to Neons. I don't know if you remember Neons.
Yes.
Everyone that went there just has such fond memories, and we miss just the vibe.
Oh my God, totally. Like my mom used to go to Neons when she was my age. And then I lived in Over the Rhine in 2008, 9, 10, and 11. And I don't know if it was open then. It had just reopened back up. So
the famous Neons Unplugged.
Yes, yes.
Well, we used to hang out at Neons. And then when Neons closed, a lot of my friends within the LGBTQ plus community and allies, we really didn't have a consistent place to gather.
Yeah.
So we were lamenting one Sunday afternoon in another bar. Actually, it was Mr. Pitiful's.
Yeah. Oh my God, I love Mr. Pitiful's.
Yeah. And the Sunday afternoon crowd there is a great group of people. So we were just hanging out, talking. It was February 2017. And I said to Laura, who was one of our favorite bartenders at Neons, who was working at Pitiful's, I said to Laura, wouldn't it be great to do a tea dance here on a Sunday afternoon? And she said, what's a tea dance? So then I had to explain to her what a tea dance is. So
would you mind giving us a little expert, like just
an
outline of what a tea dance is?
Of course. So tea dances were really popular in the 1950s. It was really the place to socialize for straight people and also for gay people. But in those days, it was illegal for gay people to dance in public. So these were sort of tea rooms where you could dance, and it was safe spaces to meet people and go on a date. So it was illegal for gay people to dance in public.
Oh my God, that I don't even want to get on how much that makes me angry. I was on the the Alliance, the LGBTQA Alliance at UC when I was a student there. And I've always been
a passionate ally.
Yes, very
That's
much
wonderful.
So.
That's wonderful. We need allies.
Man, it breaks my heart anyway. At least whatever one has gone through just seems so wrong to me. And I also have a Stonewall tattoo.
I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
You're so,
it's very near and dear to
so
my
cool.
heart.
So it was illegal to dance in public, and it was also illegal to serve alcohol to gay people. Can you believe that?
No, God, no.
Yeah.
That is so fucked up.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know this, but I need to say it out every time. That is so fucked up.
Yeah, yeah. And so tea dances for gay people went underground into speakeasies and places where there were owners of bars that were supportive. Gay men would walk into these spaces with a female decoy.
Yeah.
And if the cops came and raided the joint, then they'd scramble, and you'd have an opposite sex couple dancing. So it was a way of avoiding arrest and being thrown in jail.
Wow.
So that was the scene in the 1950s. And so fast forward to post-Stonewall era. So Stonewall in 1969 was the start, really, of the global civil rights movement for the LGBTQ community.
Wow. And so tea dances then, they stopped?
No, they didn't. They continued. Okay. So what you saw then post-Stonewall was cities, you know, gayborhoods grow, you know, emerging in cities like New York, San Francisco. So gay bars, you know, really started to flourish.
I feel like the world just became a much better place. You know what I mean? It really did. It became more alive.
It took a positive step forward.
Definitely.
It's a long journey, isn't
yes.
it? So
arduous in the least.
Right. A couple of steps forward, you know, one step back.
Yes.
So these tea dances continued. It was a way to prolong the fun weekend. They were always on a Sunday afternoon. And so they would start around 4 o'clock and end at 7-ish. So that gave people time to grab dinner, get home, and start the week in a relatively, you know,
excited place.
Sane state of mind.
Yeah. It was kind of like therapy. Yeah, you know, right. You got to be, being around your people and like your tribe is so good for the soul and the heart. I feel like it's just makes you, it's just self-affirmation that you're living life and you're doing a great job. And no matter what anybody says, that you're fabulous.
Absolutely.
Don't you think?
Absolutely.
I feel like at least. When you're feeling like a fish out of water is such an uncomfortable place to be and living like that all the time, I can say it's tough.
I think at the tea dances, people can really let their hair down and be themselves in a safe setting, a safe, supportive setting.
Yes.
So we started doing tea dances in Cincinnati in April of 2017.
Okay.
So it was actually at Pitifuls. We did the first one at Pitifuls.
That's right. And how did that go?
It was incredible. I created a Facebook page, an invitation to people, sent it to all my friends on Facebook, and I had a DJ that I wanted to play there. His name is DJ Thaddeus.
Nice.
A lot of the LGBTQ community know Thaddeus. He's been around for many years.
Okay.
He's such a supportive ally. And so we were there at 4 o'clock. We said it was going to start at 4 o'clock. And 4:10, there were just a couple of people. 4:20, more and more people started coming in. And about 4:45, there were about 200 people there.
I mean, right from the get-go, obviously there was a space and a place where people were craving something like this. You know, there was a need. There was a call, and you definitely delivered. And I've been to a couple of them, and they are just so much fun. I get too out of control. Whereas usually on Sundays, I'm like, I can't start my Mondays like this, so I have to pace myself.
Yeah.
But I love them. And has it been hard? There's so many things I want to ask. Like, obviously, they're not happening because of COVID.
Right.
And I feel like, I mean, they are like the heartbeat of the LGBTQ community in Cincinnati now. And not only that, you're bringing in a lot of businesses. They're really highlighting new businesses and new spaces. And I love how each one is different and has a different theme.
Yeah, I can't believe how they've really grown organically. I mean, that's the word I use every time. Little did I know when I did the first one that it would be so popular, but there really was a need for them.
Okay, so you were saying that you were a scientist and, you know, working at P&G and you're happy there, but you really, your artistic brain has really come alive with these. So do you have a team that plans these and comes up with the themes or whatnot, or is it in the spaces, like the locations, or is it kind of you?
It's actually down to me.
That's so cool. Oh, my goodness.
It's so much fun planning them and marketing them on social media.
You do a fabulous job.
Thank you, Natalie.
Very, very fabulous. It's really the information is always easy to find and absorb. And I love it. I feel plugged in.
We do them once a month. Mm-hmm. And I think the last one we had 600 people the Hall of Mirrors at the Hilton Netherland Plaza.
I missed that one.
Mm-hmm. It was incredible. It's such a beautiful space anyway.
It is. Wait, 600 people. I thought the Hall of Mirrors could only hold 500. right?
By the way, people that spilled outside into the into the atrium.
Wait, can I ask you just off the record? Do you? I mean, did people have to pay to go into that one, or how did you?
No, no. So tea dances are always free.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So how did you manage that?
We never charge an admission for tea dances because we think they should be free and available to anyone that's supportive.
They totally are. Thank you. I mean, I'm like. You're just creating something so fabulous with it. I mean, it just seems like it's a God-given right. You know what I mean? And I just ask about Hall of Mirrors. Isn't it really expensive to rent the Hall of Mirrors?
Well, yes.
Okay.
And if you sort of think about it logically, having 600 people there on a Sunday afternoon having an incredible time, you know, if the space doesn't have a booking, right, and we can come along and bring 600 people... it can be very lucrative, financially. But I think it's just more. It's more than just that. It's a win-win for the space, and it's a win for the community.
Wow!
Because many people that come to these iconic spaces in Cincinnati, and so the tea dances are held in various spaces like the Contemporary Arts Center, the Hall of Mirrors, the American Sign Museum.
Oh, okay.
We've hit many of the real cool spots. So if you really think about it, many people may not ordinarily think about going to places like that.
Yeah.
So it's a way of having the LGBTQ community experience very cool spaces like that, and it's also an opportunity for the venue. To welcome
really
the LGBTQ
off.
Community, and it's good publicity for them.
It really is. Well, and it's also on a Sunday afternoon, which I feel like just makes it so special. And it's not, you're not paying a ticket to go on a Friday night for anything. You feel like you have to wear something, et cetera, et cetera. And it's you're making it super, super special. So I would say, after years of success with the tea dance, have you ever missed a Sunday though? Have you ever missed a month?
Since April 2017, we have not missed a month.
Wow.
Up until COVID. So the last one was February 2020. So this year, this year at the Hall of Mirrors.
Wow.
And then, of course, in March, we had to cancel because of COVID. And so we actually did host an outside tea dance at Rosedale, which is formerly Neon's.
Yeah.
We did that in July. And we actually had the adjacent parking lot.
Yeah.
And so what we were able to do was to actually tape off safe spaces for groups, so people that would come in groups of 10 or less. They'd be within their group and they could sit at a table. And if they wanted to dance, they could do so, you know, in a safe, socially distanced way.
And how did it go?
It went incredibly well.
Yeah. Oh,
that
great.
Was the last one that we did, though, really, and it was obviously a much smaller tea dance because of the space constraints. I mean, we had a lot of space, but because of the social distancing constraints.
So, doing these tea dances, is this what made you want to open E19? Because now you and Marty have opened the bar of the town right now, E19 in the Finley Market area. I've been a couple times. And what we mentioned earlier is you and Marty sit at the entrance and welcome everybody. Do you guys don't do that at the tea dances, do you?
Yes, I do.
You do? Okay.
Yeah, I try to make sure that I greet as many people as possible at the tea dances. When you have 600 people going in and out, it can be a bit challenging.
Okay.
But I do my very best to meet new people and make them feel welcomed. And wherever I can, I help to, you know, create connections between people. So people who are new to town, you know, if they're looking to make friends or make connections with certain organizations, volunteer work, I can help make that happen for them.
So did you have that in mind when you decided to start these, that
no,
it would become a social, like a town thing?
Not at all. I think, you know, the motivations were a little bit selfish to begin with because I wanted a space to hang out on a Sunday with my friends.
Yeah, most are.
But it quickly became much more than that.
Well, so are you feeding into more of the artistic side of you now with these? And do you planning out in advance how many months in advance?
It's usually about 2 months in advance to plan, 2 to 3 months to plan a tea dance. I think the formula is I've got that pre-down pat now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's working with the venue, making sure the space can accommodate a large number of people, you know, logistically and safely. This is, you know, this was before COVID.
Yeah.
So that, you know, so even in situations, you know, before COVID and once we emerge from COVID, you know, we need to have people when they gather in large numbers like that to do so safely. But I think a key driving factor for the venue selection is, you know, does this sort of, you know, is this a cool place for us to hang out in,
mm-hmm.
right? And that can be, you know, you can assess that in so many different ways. It could be an incredibly supportive management. It could be an actually fabulous, beautiful space like the Hall of Mirrors, right?
Yeah.
But the venue is really important. The other piece is music.
Yes.
And I would say that is probably the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a stable of amazing DJs that play at the tea dances. And the music is always very enticing. And, you know, it's kind of like the what we call the gay anthems and the divas and
yes.
the dance
yes.
dance music. A little bit of house here and there.
I cannot wait until there is a coffee table book made of all the tea dances over the years. I don't know. Does one exist yet? I haven't found one.
What a great idea.
But that needs to happen.
Yeah.
Definitely. You know, there's so many pictures and photographers that are there taking pictures all the time. This is a call. This is a call to action right now. Anyone, please email me, Natalie or Richard, so we can make this happen.
I love
that,
Natalie.
Just imagine. What a great Christmas gift that would be. Anyway, so then, okay, so you've done these. So you start these, the tea dances, and they're wickedly successful. And then did you decide before COVID to open E19?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so how long has that been in the mix?
So it's been 2 years.
Wow.
From start to open. And so I think the tea dances gave me the courage to, and I always thought about opening a bar, but I didn't know mm-hmm. how and what that would look like. And so the learnings from the tea dances allowed me to sort of put together the vision for E19.
Mm-hmm.
And
what was your vision?
So the vision was to sort of build on the tea dances, to have a consistent space. So the tea dances happen once a month in various different places,
yeah.
which is great. And we'll continue to do that. The tea dances are their own, you know, it's its own brand.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to continue to do that after COVID. And so, you know, we'll be hopping around
yes.
the cool spots in Cincinnati again.
Yay!
And so in addition to that, we have a number of LGBTQ bars. And you know, my philosophy is more, not less is more.
Mm-hmm.
So when I thought about E19, I thought about, you know, we have a growing LGBTQ plus population here in the city.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to have more offerings for a growing, healthy, vibrant community.
Well, and also in the past 2 years, so many bars have closed. Let's see, what was it, the Dock closed? That's been in just the past 2 years, at least 3 years, you know, and then there was, what was it, the Subway and then Spurs. And it seems, did you feel like a lot of the places that you used to call home were closing for your community?
Yeah, they were closing for various reasons.
Yeah.
And so when I did my planning and research for E19, one of the things that I consistently asked people, you know, people are saying, you know, well, bars are closed, gay bars are closing, you know, are you going to be successful?
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them pointedly, it's all well and good, you know, that we have inclusive bars, so straight-owned, straight-run bars that welcome the LGBTQ community, and there are many,
mm-hmm.
Which is fantastic. But I asked some of my gay friends, in spite of all of that, do you feel safe and comfortable holding hands with your significant other, your husband, your wife? Do you feel comfortable in these inclusive settings? Do you feel comfortable making out like straight people do?
Yeah.
And the answer was always no.
Really?
So despite all of the support and inclusivity, I think it goes up to a certain point.
Yeah.
Okay. And then when you start showing, you know, affection, mm-hmm. especially, you know, when in a setting where people have been drinking,
mm-hmm.
it can get very challenging and you know, things can happen.
Do you think that there is going to be a time in your lifetime where there won't even be gay bars? They'll just be there will just be bars, and they won't have to be labeled gay for the gay community.
That's a really good question. Right now I feel like we are doing a bit of a 180.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is more of a desire to have bars that are gay owned, gay run, straight friendly.
Okay.
And so that's how we refer to ourselves at E19.
Wow, that's wonder. I didn't think about it that way. I haven't heard it articulated that way, and that's beautiful.
So it's just sort of spinning it around, right?
And just normalizing. So, I hate to use the word normalizing, but
yeah,
you know what I mean.
So many straight bars that are inclusive of gay people will say, "Yeah, we're gay friendly." I would like to think of E19 as straight friendly.
Yeah, cool. Well, it definitely is. As a straight person who I've dated a chick or two in my day, but I love E19, and it's, I mean, I haven't heard anybody say that before, and I feel like there doesn't have to be all or any sort of special compartment all the time for certain things. You know what I mean? I'm like, does it have to be a gay bar only? Why doesn't that? Because then is that not opening it up to everybody else who wants to go?
Yeah.
You know?
Great question, Ali. I think if we said we're a gay only bar, that would be so like not inclusive.
Yeah.
And it would be going against what we really stand for. We are an inclusive bar that serves the LGBTQ community and our allies. Mm. So of course we welcome straight people. We want straight people to come there as allies because we need allies.
Yeah.
No minority group has been able to achieve any kind of rights or equal benefits without the support of allies. You know, look at the women's civil rights movement,
yeah.
Right? Women, you know, being able to vote. They couldn't mm-hmm. have done that without men voting to say that, yeah, we want to give women the vote.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes, and it couldn't have happened with the normalization of it. And in time. I feel like time is a thing, too. So,
yeah.
Unfortunately, to say that gay marriage was legalized in Cincinnati in the past 5 years, right? Was it the... Three years ago?
Well, so in 2015, so
yeah.
That was nationally, right? So
yes.
That was the Supreme Court decision.
And since then, you know, I just feel like, do you feel like in time over the past 5 years, has it changed? I feel like that has drastically changed everything. Like the Pride is a big deal to me, and I love being a part of Pride. I've done Pride in cities all over America. What I love about Cincinnati is in the 3 years that I've been there, the past 3 years, they're just straight families with kids running around, which is wonderful. That did not used to happen. And that I don't feel like that would have happened 10 years ago.
Agree. I think it has normalized the conversation, normalized people's beliefs and behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a good thing. As I said earlier, it's a journey for us.
Mm-hmm.
It's still two steps forward, one step back.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we have seen a lot of hateful legislation occurring, certainly at the federal level, you know, with transgender troops mm-hmm. not being able to serve in the forces. And so we need to put that right. We need to put that right. At the federal level, we also need to address any discrimination locally. I can honestly say in Cincinnati, I've seen an incredible turnaround from when we had Article 12 on the books. And I know that is an old tape. It's no longer on, it's no longer a law where it's, you know, lawful to discriminate
mm-hmm.
against LGBTQ plus people. And the city has transformed. It has become one of the most inclusive cities in the country. We were one of the first cities to ban conversion therapy.
I know, I love that. Yes.
Isn't that, so that's not really well known. And every time I say that to people, especially people from out of town,
mm-hmm.
every time I say that, they just shake their head in disbelief. And so we need to get that out. You know, we need to get the word out that Cincinnati is a cool place, that it is a place where we have very inclusive policies, for LGBT plus people.
Yeah.
So my part is to create a safe space at
E19. I think you have a huge part in all of this, in putting Cincinnati on the map when it comes to inclusivity and equality and in the gay community in general. Like 10 years ago, and let's see, was it Chris Thielbach when he first ran? I went to the rally and I took my little, this was what, in 2009, 2010?
Mm-hmm.
And I took my little brother who was 13, and I remember that day he saw some discrimination happening, and he was so attuned to it and so aware, and he was like, this is so wrong. And I thought it was beautiful that a 13-year-old can be raised, and I was like, you're 13 and all the kids younger than you hopefully will be raised under this mentality. And like, what an amazing, what a huge shift and change. And it's only gotten better and better and better. And I feel like in the past 10 years in Cincinnati especially, it's totally flipped.
Yes.
Totally changed.
And it's due, and that's due to courageous leaders like Chris.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about,
and you too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And Chris has been tremendously supportive of me in terms of the tea dances at E19. So it was wonderful to welcome him and his husband there,
mm-hmm.
A couple of weeks ago. And so, yeah, Chris has done so much for the city and the LGBTQ plus community here.
So can I ask, maybe this is off the record, but does P&G have such a big presence in Pride because of you?
So P&G does have a very big presence. We have terrific support within P&G.
Mm-hmm.
We have various what we call affinity teams. Mm-hmm. So the LGBTQ plus affinity team is called Gable.
Yes, and I love that.
And so Gable is one of the three global affinity teams within P&G.
Okay.
And so we have global sponsors. We have regional leaders and sponsors. I actually was one of the leaders for the North America region.
How was that?
So I've been part of Gable. I'm still part of Gable. I'm not in a leadership role now per se, but I was one of the co-leaders for the North America region.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's 50 plus sites in North America.
Mm-hmm.
Manufacturing plants, our business and technical centers. And so it was an incredibly rewarding experience. I learned a lot as a leader. I learned a lot about the challenges that some of our employees faced. And I like to think that we were able to make a difference for our employees.
What is something that you've learned from being a leader at Gable that you can relay to us? Something that one of your most noteworthy things?
I would say that I tend to flourish better one-on-one, in conversations one-on-one,
mm-hmm.
Versus, you know, large settings. And I think it's really important to really get to, you know, so as a leader, it's really important to listen and to listen empathetically with the person, with our employee that's talking to us about the challenge that he or she is facing.
Mm-hmm.
And to show that he or she has been heard, and then to show that you know, we're taking action.
Hmm.
Taking action is it's that old adage that actions speak louder than words, and they truly do. I mean, words
yes.
are hollow, talk is cheap. It's about taking
yeah.
action. And one of my mottos is, and I learned this from a mentor many years ago, and he said, no excuse is as good as a result.
So
no
true.
Excuse is as good as a result.
I'm gonna write that down.
The other thing that I heard was 99% commitment is a bitch, 100% commitment is a cinch.
Ah.
Right?
Wow. I think you just solved all of my life problems in that sentence right there.
Are you committed or are you not?
Oh my God, leaving the door. I feel like I leave the door open to so many things a lot. I leave too much room for a mistake or for me to back out or for other things to come in. Wow.
So I try to live my life that way. It's not perfect by any means. As I go about my life here at P&G and at E19, as a husband, as a father, I have two children, as a friend, I try to be empathetic. I try to listen to people. I try to take action. And when I make a commitment, I strive to follow through on that commitment.
Definitely. Well, it seems like you really are in every facet of your life, Richard. And I hope that was easy enough for you to follow along. Thank you so much, Richard. I had an absolute blast meeting you and talking to you. I cannot wait to do it again. Everybody stay safe and stay happy this holiday season.
This has been Person of Interest with Natalie Jones.